Hello and welcome to the A440 Podcast, the one music podcast everyone can get in tune with. I'm your host, Charles Fiore, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 1. I am so excited to begin a second season behind the mic. Got some awesome guests lined up this year, and we're going to be exploring a lot of interesting things different from last season. I think you're going to really enjoy it. So thank you. If you're a first-time listener, thanks for tuning in. If you're coming back for round two, that is awesome. Very much appreciate you. I wanted to share a funny story to start things off from the summer. So you'll remember back in season one, we did an entire episode devoted to the artist Ernie Barnes. That was episode 3 of season 1, Big Rembrandt. Of course, you'll remember Barnes as the painter of The Sugar Shack. It was used on the hit TV show Good Times, and also on the cover of a Marvin Gaye album, I Want You. Well, it turns out, back when I was in my early 20s, I bought my first turntable, and back then, like, vinyl wasn't a big deal. You could get mint condition records for like $3. Nobody had turntables, and the turntables you could buy were expensive. So I saved up, bought my first turntable, and I made a commitment to myself then that I was only going to buy jazz, soul, and R&B LPs. I don't exactly remember why I decided that. I think I didn't want my LP collection to be tainted by like a bunch of new bands that I would like listen to once and then forget about. I wanted to kind of keep it pure. I also wanted to use my LP collection, my vinyl collection, as a way to explore a musical form that I was just sort of really coming to understand and appreciate. So I bought a bunch of albums, dirt cheap. And, you know, last year we did this entire episode about Ernie Barnes, talked at length about Marvin Gaye and the painting, The Sugar Shack. And just recently, I was going through my record collection thinking, you know, I'd like to hear some Marvin Gaye. I know I got a Marvin Gaye album tucked away here somewhere. Pull it out, and wouldn't you know it, the Marvin Gaye album I bought when I was 21, probably as part of like the initial batch of LPs I bought to start my collection, was Marvin Gaye's album I Want You with The Sugar Shack on the front cover. And here I did an entire episode on Ernie Barnes and The Sugar Shack. I didn't even realize I owned it on vinyl. Which is ridiculous, I know. But also, it was kind of like 21-year-old me, like, gave a gift to 41-year-old me. It was like receiving a gift from myself from 20 years ago. A friend of mine came by the house and said, mentioned that Marvin Gaye album is actually pretty hard to find on vinyl. Like I said, I got it dirt cheap because nobody was buying vinyl back then. And anyway, I'm going to hang on to it for sure. It's in great shape, and it's just really even more special, knowing the background of that album cover. So I was fortunate enough to take 2 trips this past year, pretty much solely to hear music. One trip is an annual trip with a couple of old friends of mine, and this year we chose Detroit, Michigan as our destination. Detroit might not strike you as the most obvious choice when planning a musical vacation, but I guess I sort of imagined that in Detroit there would be some kind of beautiful old theater that offered nightly performances of classic R&B and Motown standards, you know, the same way you can go to New Orleans and hear Preservation Hall, or, you know, Chicago and go to Buddy Guy's Blues Bar, right? I kind of thought the same thing would be true in Detroit. Turns out it's not. Detroit, of course, home to Motown's first headquarters, aka Hitsville, USA, where Berry Gordy purchased the Hitsville, USA building in 1959 and converted it to use for his record label as the recording studio and general cool hangout for all the musicians of that era. I mean, it's pretty much impossible to give an accounting of Berry Gordy's entire career, but it's enough to say that he launched and produced acts like The Supremes, Marvin Gaye, The Temptations, Four Tops, Jackson 5, Stevie Wonder. The list goes on and on. So it stands to reason I thought we could roll into Detroit and, you know, find some pretty good Motown R&B, but no, you cannot. And while there are some really beautiful performing arts venues in Detroit, we kind of went the opposite direction and sought out the more underground music venues, off the beaten trail a little bit, took some recommendations from some locals we met, and ended up at a couple of places in particular. One was called PJ's Lager House. Now, this place is pretty cool. There's a little vinyl shop in the basement of this place, and it's got kind of a long bar when you first walk in, and around the corner is a small stage. Probably get a couple hundred people in there if everybody was packed in. You know, we heard it was a kind of a variety night. Basically, white men doing their best Eminem impersonations, which I think is an accurate description. Here is a sample of one of the duos we heard whose name has been lost to history. Still a very cool venue. Beers were cheap. In fact, I don't think I paid more than $2 for a beer anywhere in Detroit that weekend. And friendly staff, you know. Cool venue. Perfect for, if you love music, I would put PJ's Lager House high on the list of must hits. Just to soak it in, soak in the atmosphere, check out the vinyl store downstairs, have a beer, check out whatever local acts happening on the stage. The second place we checked out, and what turned out to be arguably the highlight of the trip, was a place called the UFO Factory. Not too far from PJ's Lager House, short Uber ride. And this is a pretty cool venue. I remember it as walking in as sort of like this eerie blue light and a lot of really cool people drinking hip cocktails. But the thing about Detroit is, everything's a little bit gritty still, you know? The locals have some fierce pride in where they're from. They pride in the fact that they've built these things from nothing. And so even like the most, like this bar in even Durham would, you know, the cocktails would be like $72 and you'd want to punch every single person in the bar in the face the minute you walked in. This same bar in Detroit, however, like is cool. Like cocktails weren't that expensive. Beers were $2. I could be found a seat before the music started and the stage was very easily accessible. And we saw a couple of pretty awesome bands. The first act was this trio featuring an instrument called the Nieti, and I'm sure I mispronounced that. The Nieti, it's a West African instrument. You can Google it, check it out on YouTube. It's awesome. They did a lot of really indigenous sounding kind of dance tunes and played a lot with time signature, and they were very cool. They opened, however, for what may be my favorite band of all time, and the name, of course, is something completely un-Googleable, such as XK, KX, XY, ZZZ, something like that. An all-female trio at various times featuring bass, guitar, saxophone, drums in various combinations. And, to call it garage rock, underground garage rock, would actually be doing it too much service. Like, it's so far underground, it pops out in China. But I was smart enough to take a bit of footage, and I'm going to play a sample for you. Dig it. Awesome. I mean, at a certain point, you just embrace what's going on and realize you're in the presence of musical genius. Anyway, Detroit came through, had a great time, would love to go back. Love the fact that it's one of the few metropolitan areas left in the country that still has a little bit of grit to it, where you don't feel 100% safe walking down the street. And like, call me crazy, but that's kind of how I like my cities. I like a little bit of scruffiness to them. I shouldn't be able to get a mocha latte on every corner, and I should have to walk through like a sketchy back alley to find the cool bar. It shouldn't just be like right out there in the middle next to, you know, a fucking Starbucks and a Forever 21. The The second trip I took over the summer was to the great town of New Orleans. Been to New Orleans, of course, many times. The Mrs. A440 podcast is from there, so we go back a few times a year. And we always make a point to go out and see music. This year, we lined up something a little bit special, which we hadn't done before. We went ahead and bought tickets in advance to Preservation Hall down in the French Quarter on the corner of St. Peter and Bourbon. Now, I will say a little bit of friendly advice. Go ahead and prepay a little extra for the Big Shot ticket, which gives you guaranteed access the night of the show and also priority seating. Not only does this let you not have to wait in line in the sweltering heat, scum, and overriding vomity stench of bourbon, you get to just walk right in. And then you get to walk right in and, like we were, get seated like basically on the stage. Like I was against the wall, house right. To my right was an upright piano that was being played by one of the musicians. To my left was the Mrs. A440 podcast. And I was basically like parallel with the couple of the horn players, right? I was basically on stage with these guys as the show was going on, which was super cool. Preservation Hall was founded in 1961 as a venue to showcase what's known as traditional New Orleans jazz. I kind of think of it as like Dixieland jazz, but that term has kind of fallen out of favor for obvious reasons. But, imagine like a clarinet and some other horns and, some light drums, thumping bass, great piano, traditional New Orleans jazz, a little bit like kind of what we're listening to right now. It's situated right in the heart of the French Quarter, and they do several concerts a night, like 350 nights out of the year. So the place is a classic New Orleans venue. It's been around over 50 years. So we were excited to go in, and luckily we didn't have to wait on the street. I got those Big Shot early tickets. Now, I feel like though this sort of like a PSA warning. Like, they let us in. The show was for 8 p.m. Our tickets were for an 8 p.m. show. By the time they let us in, it was 8:05, and they stood all the audience members in this sort of long hallway that was filled with merchandise and Preservation Hall swag. And so by the time they kind of let us file into the venue itself and got us seated, it was easily 8:15. And the room is small. I mean, it probably doesn't hold maybe 100 people, but there are people like us kind of on the stage, there are people in benches, there are people on the floor, there are people standing in back. And that's the other thing about getting the Big Shot ticket is that, kind of guarantees you a seat, whereas you may, even if you don't get the Big Shot ticket, you wait in line, or if you do the Rush ticket, you may end up standing in the back or seated on the floor, which, I'm too old for that. Anyway, so 8:15 by the time the show goes off, and I know there's another show at 9, and it was pretty evident from like the very first tune that all 6 or 8 musicians were just like utterly mailing it in. And I should, as a disclaimer, like I enjoy this traditional New Orleans jazz. It's one of the kind of musical styles that I try to collect on vinyl. I'm always interested in hearing a new vinyl of some old Dixieland band. But these musicians were just totally checked out. Like, I am not a professional piano player. I'm not even an amateur piano player. My last piano lesson was 30 years ago. But I am fairly certain that even in the more abstract, dissonant construct of jazz, that the piano player to my right, I can see her hands very well, sounded and looked as though she wasn't always playing the right notes, if you know what I mean. Like, there were some missteps, especially early on. The tunes, I think they played about 4 tunes. They were all listless. And the last tune, of course, featured a long solo by a kid who's maybe 18 years old, which was cool. You sort of feel he wasn't really part of the show. They kind of brought him in to kind of showcase the future of New Orleans traditional jazz. But at the same time, he was not a professional musician. So like, if I wanted to hear like my cousin Johnny like solo and noodle around on his guitar, I would just, go to my cousin's house and listen to him in the basement or whatever. I don't have to pay $50 a ticket. So anyway, show wraps up 8:55 p.m. We're out the door before 9, and that was it. I think they played maybe a sum total of about like a half hour of music. So when you think about like what you're paying per minute for this experience, it's not a really good deal, especially because the music really was far from mind-blowing. And I hate to throw Preservation Hall under the bus. I was so looking forward to it. Like, the venue could be really cool. It's kind of dark, and they've got it I mean, I'm fairly sure that in a Disney kind of way, they've weathered the inside to look like it's from the 1920s and 30s. But, and even still, I can live with the Disneyfication of that if the musicians were on point. But they were not this night in August. And granted, there were a couple things working against us. First of all, August in New Orleans. First of all, who the hell goes to New Orleans in August, right? Except for us. So it's possible that these were like the B-list musicians or like the understudies who were just filling in during what's kind of the slower time in New Orleans, although the venue was pretty packed while we were there. And also, like, I get it. Like, yes, okay, fine. Like, the French Quarter is super touristy and they're going to nickel and dime you for like every single thing you purchase or want to do there. But that doesn't mean like you can go down to Galatoire's down the street on Bourbon and still have a very awesome experience eating there and having a great time. So it's not like authentic experiences don't exist in the French Quarter in New Orleans. So they could recreate, or they could give us that if they wanted to. But also, dude, like, you're a professional musician. Like, I'm sorry you had a bad day or whatever. You know, like, your job is to get up on stage and perform. Like, Broadway actors don't get to mail it in. They have to deliver a performance and hit certain emotional highs and lows every day, every night that they're performing in this show, you know? The same goes for a lot of people. Surgeons, you know, you have to be able to deliver. You have to be able to perform. And at $50 a head, I mean, you know, honestly, like, the audience deserves better. So anyway, so for me, it wasn't even as much about like the length of the set, although that was extremely short and kind of sucked. But it was really more the way that like the musicians were just kind of mailing it in. I just think if I owned Preservation Hall, like, even if I was the biggest cheapskate in the world and pinching pennies, I would still want to demand that my musicians delivered an A-plus performance, you know, in such a storied venue with such, in such prime real estate, you know, with such name recognition. However, we did hear an amazing street band, and this is why I love New Orleans. I mean, from one corner to the next, honestly, like, you might hear some of the most amazing music you've heard. And we wandered out for breakfast one morning at Café du Monde in the French Quarter. Had to get our beignet fix. And the band we're listening to right now, who are apparently called the JS All-Stars, at least that's what's written in Sharpie across the CD I bought from them. We're playing outside Café du Monde that morning. I don't know, maybe about a dozen members, and like, I think they were probably just up from the night before, or like, just coming home from their last gig, you know, and kind of assembled and played some tunes. And I mean, had one of those like transcendental moments. I was hadn't quite eaten breakfast yet. I had my first coffee though. They were playing. I was holding my son and sitting there in the beautiful morning. Band was rocking, and they went into a Waylon version of St. James Infirmary, which one of the best versions of that song I've ever heard, frankly, one of my all-time favorites. Unfortunately, St. James Infirmary is not included on the CD they sold, otherwise I'd play it for you now. But just trust me when I tell you, man, it was amazing, and maybe the musical highlight of that great trip to New Orleans. Which is what makes our experience at Preservation Hall all the more grating. It's like, you have, like, prime quality musicians like coming out, like, just laying around on street corners in New Orleans. You could pretty much grab any store clerk and stick a guitar in his hand and he'll deliver a optimal musical experience, you know what I mean? Like, there's no reason to have these guys in Preservation Hall up on stage like falling asleep behind their horn or whatever, you know what I mean? So anyway, rant over. Okay. The last thing I want to talk about on this episode, I would like to deliver a eulogy. iTunes passed away since the last time we got together, and I think it's only fitting for us to take a moment of silence and then reflect on everything iTunes has given us and taken away. First, the moment of silence. So, very soon, and if it hasn't happened already, Apple is closing iTunes. It's now becoming three different apps, one for music, one for podcasts, and one for TV. Moving forward, you'll sync using the Finder on Macs. And there won't be any changes for people who use Windows. We get to keep doing things the way we always have, which is sort of like every PC user in a nutshell. So anyway, the change for iTunes here is overdue. Both the tech and the needs of the users have far surpassed the functionality of iTunes now. Everything's kind of moving toward fee-based subscription services anyway. And, you know, these subscriptions do seem to be largely replacing single purchase items. Still, I feel it fitting to deliver a bit of a eulogy. I remember very clearly the first iPod my wife and I bought, and we hooked it up and put some music on there. It was probably like Coldplay and the soundtrack for Garden State. And my wife like had the iPod in her pocket and the headphones on. And I just like came up to her and like grabbed one of the headphones, checked it out. And it was like this mind-blowing moment where like, oh my God, there are countless number of amazing songs in my wife's pocket. I mean, that was like crazy, you know, that just had never really happened before. And it was like this moment of stepping into the future and suddenly giving a music nerd like me like access to a catalog of music that I would never have had access to otherwise. Then, like now, the libraries were still an issue. I remember my sister-in-law, when she had married her husband, they merged iTunes libraries, and he kind of merged their libraries without telling her. And she was one of those very meticulous music listeners who like has their libraries perfectly ordered by artist, by genre. And then my brother-in-law rolls in and just like dumps all his, you know, his gamer beats and his electronic music on there. Love you, Mike. And just like totally jacked up her library. I remember my sister-in-law just like complaining about that for a good long while. You know, the pains of merging iTunes libraries. I mean, it's right now it's enough of a pain for me to find stuff in my own library. I can't imagine merging it with someone else who I haven't lived with for 20 years or whatever. So anyway, Godspeed iTunes. Godspeed to the iPod. You were life-changing, and I've enjoyed every minute, really every minute we've spent together. I want to read this little piece written by David Pierce at Wired. I think it just sort of sums up kind of everything I'm feeling. The way some people think about flipping through the LPs in a record store or obsessively organizing their CDs into a hefty black Case Logic binder, some people remember their iPod, plugging it into the computer, waiting forever for iTunes to open and sync, managing metadata, curating playlists, most of all, the feeling of a click wheel whirring underneath your thumb as you searched for the perfect track. And that's our show. Check us out on social media, A440Pod. Website is a440pod.com. Tell your friends, download some episodes. Let's jam again soon.